You're sitting in your car between errands, phone buzzing with texts you're ignoring. A rare quiet moment. And suddenly, a question surfaces. Am I actually happy? Not the surface level fine you tell everyone, but genuinely, deeply okay. Most of us sprint through life so fast, we never pause to ask. We're too busy being what others need us to be. The reliable colleague, the good parent, the supportive friend. But here's a truth that might sting. You can't pour from an empty cup, and most of us are running on fumes. This isn't a self-help cliche. It's the foundation of everything that follows. Before you can show up authentically for anyone else, you need to know who's actually showing up. Stop for a second. Who's the most important person in your life? If you just named your spouse, parent, or child, you've missed someone critical, yourself. This isn't narcissism. It's oxygen mask logic. On planes, they tell you to secure your own mask first because you're useless to others if you're unconscious. Life works the same way. Taking a you day when you're overwhelmed, ignoring emails, declining calls, just existing, isn't selfish. It's preventative maintenance. When your tank hits empty, your decisions suffer, your patience evaporates, and everyone around you pays the price. Think of yourself as the star of your own movie. You wouldn't watch a film where the protagonist constantly sacrifices their needs until they collapse, would you? That's not inspiring. It's tragic. Being the lead doesn't mean ignoring others' needs. It means moving consciously rather than reflexively. Yes, sometimes a sick child or struggling friend genuinely comes first. But if you're constantly the supporting character in your own story, you'll spend your life seeking external validation, unable to make decisions without a committee's approval. Notice when you hesitate to take time for yourself. What are you afraid of? Disappointing someone? Being seen as selfish? Track these moments. Create a self-care inventory. Maybe it's morning coffee in silence, a long walk, or an hour with a book. Then actually protect that time. Because taking responsibility for your happiness isn't optional. It's the price of admission to a life that's actually yours. What if you could do absolutely anything? Not the practical answer, but the secret dream you've buried under, "That's not realistic." Wild dreams aren't impossible, they're just untested. A psychologist who never played professional basketball now works as an NBA life coach. The distinction matters. You can't become an Olympic gymnast at 50, but you could open a gymnastics school for adults. The path requires macro vision and micro action. Where do you want to be in 5 years? That's your North Star. What can you do today that moves you 1 inch closer? When Sarah Blakely sold fax machines, she dreamed of revolutionizing women's undergarments. Now Spanx is a billion-dollar empire. Here's the uncomfortable truth. Even your closest confidant doesn't know your 3 a.m. thoughts or unspoken dreams. Only you have access to all of you. Notice how, when facing big decisions, you usually already know the answer you want to hear. We don't seek advice for information, we seek it for permission. You're the world's leading expert on yourself, yet you constantly defer to others who know far less about your inner landscape. Building self-trust is like building muscle. It requires practice. Before asking anyone's opinion, sit with yourself first. Journal about it. Notice which option makes your chest feel lighter. Then seek external input as supplementary data, not the final verdict. Picture a kid destined for football glory, playing from age 5 through college, working out with NFL teams, signing with a semi-pro league. Then the dream dies. No draft pick, 5 years of drifting, wondering who you are when your lifelong identity evaporates. That failure became the opening chapter of something better, a career as a therapist, researcher, and NBA life coach. But it required letting go of someone else's plot outline. We all carry stories written by other people. You're the smart one. You'll never settle down. You're too tall not to play basketball. These narratives often come from well-meaning people projecting their unlived dreams onto us. Your parents wanted you to be a doctor, so you went to medical school, and now you're miserable. Being the author of your life doesn't mean rejecting all guidance. Your personal Supreme Court, those 3 to 5 people who truly know and challenge you, can help you dream bigger. But they shouldn't hold the pen. you should. This requires brutal self-reflection. Why do certain memories make you feel alive? Why does the future scare you? What makes you smile when nobody's watching? These whys are the beginning of knowing yourself, and knowing yourself is the beginning of authorship. You're holding the pen, whether you realize it or not. The only question is whether you're writing consciously or letting someone else's expectations guide your hand.
When a basketball player dribbles the ball off his foot, the mistake is identical, but the self-talk creates two entirely different realities. You idiot, you let everyone down, versus I messed up, but I'll make it right, directs 40 trillion cells to uphold that thought. Your inner voice holds more power than any external critic because it's constant, intimate, and believed without question. If you tell yourself you're not good enough, your body listens. Posture changes, confidence shrinks, opportunities pass by. Speak to yourself the way you'd speak to a dear friend facing the same situation. When a young man from rural Kansas felt lost at Long Beach State, his mom delivered truth instead of comfort. You chose it. No one forced you. Step up and figure out how to make that choice the right one. That moment birthed the concept of a personal Supreme Court, 3 to 5 people who provide wisdom and honest feedback on major decisions. Not cheerleaders, but truth tellers who know you deeply and will say what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. Before consulting them, ask yourself the hard questions first. Sit with the discomfort. Only then are you ready to hear their wisdom, because you'll be listening for guidance, not seeking someone to make the decision for you. Sacred spaces aren't luxuries. They're necessities for self-preservation. Whether it's a leather chair facing changing maples, a garden corner, a hiking trail, or a train journey, these are places where concerns dissolve and you remember who you are beneath all the roles you play. When you find these places, name them, protect them. They might be physical locations or moments in time, a concert hall, a specific cafe, a spiritual sanctuary. These spaces can shift as you evolve. The key is recognizing when a place chooses you, offering clarity, restoration, or connection to something larger. Consider objects that hold meaning, photographs, artwork, trinkets that anchor your identity. As you develop centering practices like meditation or deep breathing, certain spaces become associated with that clarity. Choose a spot in your home where you can regularly pause and dive deep. This practice will gradually infuse the space with sacredness, creating a sanctuary you can access anytime you need to come home to yourself. Starting a PhD without strong writing skills is terrifying, especially when writing is everything. The instinct? Hide the weakness. But hiding drains tenfold energy. When you finally confess to your advisor, his response is simple. I know, I'm reading your stuff. Embarrassing? Absolutely, but incredibly freeing. The secret you've protected is suddenly outside yourself, where it can be tackled. This is the paradox. We resist vulnerability fiercely, yet growth requires naming our insecurities. These weaknesses don't define us. They're just aspects alongside many strengths. Consider what you're embarrassed you can't do. Write it down. Moving the fear outside yourself begins to disarm it. Find people who offer kindness, possess skills you want, and have time to mentor. Also identify where you feel confident and help others through their vulnerabilities. Here's what nobody tells you. On the other side of admitting, I don't know, or I need help, is tremendous power. Not in vulnerability, but authenticity, the freedom to stop pretending and start growing. The person you become when you drop the facade is infinitely more compelling than the perfect image you've been exhausting yourself to maintain. Happiness evolves. What fulfilled you at 20 might bore you at 40. We chase it like a fixed destination, the right job, house, relationship, only to find it doesn't deliver as promised. Deep fulfillment often grows from pain's soil. Losing a father at 15 creates unbearable chaos, but also the capacity to connect with fatherless young men, to create spaces where Black boys share their struggles. That fulfillment stems directly from suffering. Look at your spaces of pain or loss. What happiness has grown from those roots? How have you connected with others over shared suffering? How has pain revealed passions that let you give back? List things that make you deeply happy, not entertainment or escape, but things connecting to your core identity and purpose. Then maximize your presence with these people, relationships, and causes. Because happiness isn't something you find, it's something you cultivate between who you've been and who you're becoming, in the contrast between your deepest wounds and greatest gifts. That kind of happiness, rooted in meaning rather than pleasure, doesn't fade when circumstances change. It deepens, like roots growing stronger through drought and abundance alike. In a world obsessed with external validation, we've forgotten the most radical act, truly knowing ourselves. Look in the mirror and ask, "How am I doing?" Then listen, really listen to the answer. That person staring back knows more than anyone else. Trust that voice. You're the lead in your own story. Now act like it.